You know football, and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single-game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over $500,000 to be won make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code CHARLIE, ZULU, ALPHA, BRAVO, ECHO to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season, exclusively at MyBookie.
And Muncy skies one to center field, hit well. This one's got a chance. Freeland going back to the wall. He leaps. It's in and out of his glove, but he caught it. And now chaos on the bases. Might have a play at the plate. The throw. Not in time. No, he's out. He's out. It's a forced play at the plate.
After review, the call on the field, the force out at home plate is confirmed. The runner is out. It's confirmed on the runner at third baseman. The force out is out.
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow.
It's your job. I give you money.
You never say thank you.
That's what the money is for.
That's crazy. It would have been on a talk radio show like Sports Chat or Sportzilla and the Jabberjaw.
And that was last night what the great Vern Lundquist would have said. In your life, have you seen anything quite like that?
Oh, wow! In your life, have you seen anything like that?
An unassisted GIDP that turned a grand slam into an inning-ending double play by William Contreras and the Milwaukee Brewers, who unfortunately, if you're a Brewer fan, went down in the most agonizing fashion in the bottom of the ninth inning. How you doing, everybody? Welcome to the ZabeCast. For those of you who are still mourning the death of my show in Milwaukee and also the vaporization of the entire station, 97.3 The Game, formerly your home of the Green Bay Packers, but not no more, it ain't. Vaporized like the planet Alderaan in Star Wars. Nerd! For those of you mourning my loss of that show and just, you know, waking up to me and Butchie and Luddy and all that, I feel you. I'm going to try to port as much content and topics over to here as we go forward, but I don't know how much I can do that. And I also know it's not going to be the same. I know that, well, today, Tuesday, would have been a fantastic day to be on the radio in Milwaukee talking about the play, talking about the agonizing ending, talking about every keyboard warrior saying Bryce Terang should have not moved out of the way of that pitch. He would have taken the base and tied the game. Yeah, and he would have had his knee splintered into about a million pieces. You know, the Brewers have a guy who once got hit in the ankle, leg, shin area, and it fucked him up from what was an MVP run, and he's never quite been the same. You might want to look that guy up. Yelich, I believe, is his name. And, of course, everyone's couch instincts after the fact are so superior to go, oh, I should have just not moved. Okay. It's also akin to what people screamed after the Orion Kirkering screw-up for the Dodgers, or excuse me, for the Phillies against the Dodgers in the previous round. Oh, why didn't you throw it the first? This shit happened so fast. And then, of course, he swings at a pitch in his eyes, which, I mean, look, it was not a good at bat. It's baseball. This shit happens. But what doesn't happen is a play like we saw. Unassisted, ground into double play, GIDP, GIDP, by the Dodgers. Max Muncy thought he had a grand slam. Sal Frelick, who is a ball player. God, if you love baseball and love guys who love the game and play it the right way, then Sal Frelick is your guy. 5 foot 10, maybe 5'9" on a clear day, but a great athlete. He just drew one card light in the genetics department to not be 6'2". Otherwise, he would be an absolute face of baseball superstar, kind of like that fake-ass veneer Freddie Freeman. Hey, Freddie Freeman, look at my teeth. Oh, I'd love to, bam, love to knock those piano teeth right out of his face. Apparently, he's a nice guy, I've heard, Freddie Freeman. Hate his guts, though. Hate his guts. He has tormented the Brewers as well, going back to when he was a Atlanta Brave. But I digress. So Freddie Freeman, so Sal Frelick, who I call Sal the Wonder Dog. I don't know where he came up with that nickname, just because that seems like the perfect nickname for a guy that runs around and just makes plays. He's like the dog that catches every Frisbee in the park. Sal the Wonder Dog tracks down Muncy's towering fly ball, would-be grand slam, leaps up at the wall, hits him right in the heel of the glove, pops out, glances off the corner of the top of the wall. Frelick, though, stays with it as he comes crashing down to the outfield track and makes the grab in a split second. He doesn't hesitate and immediately chucks the ball back into the infield. There are zoom-ins I've seen of Frelick's face with his big mop of hair flopping over his eyes that are incredible. The intensity in his eyes going, okay, I just made this catch. Hey, throw it in there. And then, of course, the mayhem that occurred because nobody was quite sure. Wait a minute. Did he catch it? Did it go out? Was it ruled safe because it hit the wall? I did not know that the wall equals the ground. Maybe I knew it. Maybe I've forgotten it. But at first I was like, oh yeah. Okay. Right. So as soon as the ball hits the wall, it's the same as it hitting the ground. The left field umpire, the extra umpire that they have for playoff games, which I was ironically joking when we were there at the Barrel Yard for the first game of the Brewers postseason. I'm like, look at that extra ump out there. Because he was only standing like 10 feet behind the other ump at third base. I'm like, talk about easy work for the umpires union. Look at that worthless guy out there. Well, they needed that guy because that ump was on it. That ump went out there. He's like, ooh, let me look what happens. And he saw glove, wall, catch, and he emphatically signals safe. The Brewers and their players noticed that. The Dodgers, not so much, because chaos ensued, as you heard from the call, which was a little bit unsmooth. Is that a term? From the great Brian Anderson. And I saw where Andrew Marchand of the sports media podcast, I'm going to get him on one of these days, said that he kind of butchered the call. Look, that's unfair. Anyone would have been unsmooth in that moment because it was so chaotic. And so the Brewers knew, hey, he's actually safe. Therefore, with bases loaded, we have a force at home if we can get the ball in time. And it turns out they did, because Teoscar Hernandez, for reasons unbeknownst to anybody, tagged up twice. He was tagging up to see if the ball was caught first or went over the fence. And then as soon as it was bobbled, he takes 5 steps off, which would have been fine if he just kept going. Because either way, either it's out, you can run home. If it's caught, you can run home. If it's dropped, you can run home. You just can't leave early if it's actually caught. So there was no need to double tag up, but he did for some reason. And I joked on Twitter, I'm like, imagine if there was a coach whose only job was to stand there right in the vicinity of third base and to advise runners on making sound base running decisions. Just imagine if they would assign somebody to do that.
They already do. And at first.
Oh, they do. Somebody sarcastically joked, they said, well, I don't know if a team would go to that kind of expense to just have a guy there. But shit happens. It's baseball. You see enough baseball, you see things, you go, I ain't never seen that before. And pretty much every baseball writer that I follow on Twitter and all the broadcasters that I listen to all said, nope, never seen that exact play before. An incredible heads-up awareness by all the Brewers players. And the umpires nailed it. I mean, look, blind squirrel meet nut. These incompetent donut-eating fucks, as my boy Shirey says, they actually got one right. Congratulations. Good umpiring right there in real time. Had they messed it up in real time, I don't know how you unscramble that egg. Because you would have said, well, this guy goes here, and that was then not a force, but he didn't tag him. Well, what was the signal? You know, we would have had a replay that is wrapping up right about now, 18 hours later. So it got me to thinking about, okay, what are the craziest plays in postseason history in my lifetime that I can remember off the top of my head? And I'm not talking about just gaffes or errors. Buckner obviously was a big one. That was just an error. That was not a crazy play. Trent Grisham was another one for the Brewers in right field against the Nationals when they went on to win the World Series in that wild card game. That was just an error. There have been controversies. There have been footnotes. There have been nuggets. I'm talking crazy plays. I immediately thought of the 1978 World Series, the hip check game involving Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson, Game 4, 78 World Series, Dodgers-Yankees, was caught between first and second on what would have been an easy double play of a Lou Piniella sharp ground ball to Dodger shortstop Bill Russell, who fielded it cleanly and then fired a strong throw to second for a potential double play. Actually, this version of Grok is wrong because I'm watching the play on YouTube. He didn't field it cleanly. It was a line drive to Russell. It hit his glove. It dropped to the ground. He quickly picked it up, then ran himself over to second to touch the bag and fire to first. But Jackson, Mr. October, was standing in the way, and he kind of stuck his ass out in order to deflect the ball, which allowed a run to score and a big inning to ensue. Here is what it sounded like back in the day.
Munson at second for the Yankees. Reggie Jackson at first. He's had an RBI in every game in this series. Four games, six RBIs. Drew, right at Russell, he dropped the ball. Are they going to get two? There, he threw it away. Can it hit Reggie? Hit Reggie. Confusion on the bases. Here comes Munson. He's going to score for the second run. There's a lot of confusion. The ball hit Russell's glove. It then hit the ground. Reggie Jackson was forced out, but then on a throw, that was the second out of the inning. On the throw to first base, they're saying the ball hit Reggie. It is a complicated play because Reggie is out of the play, and yet the ball might have hit him, scooted away, allowing Munson to score.
Fire. Look at that. Everybody is reaching for the ball, and finally, leaned into it.
He let it hit him purposely, and I've got to believe they're going to, well, I don't know what they're going to do, but if it is ruled intent, I think, we'll have to check the rule, I think that they could rule that runner out, as he intentionally looked like he got in the way.
He was leaning, there's no doubt. We'll run it again, and you'll make up your mind. You and the Sawyer is really upset, and you can't say that you blame him.
So there it was on the call. The umpires ended up sticking with the call, which was no interference. And, of course, Lasorda's absolute histrionics were nothing but theater at that point. The Yankees were able to go score three runs in that inning, and they went on to tie the series at 2-2. They ended up winning the World Series in seven games, 4-3. Those were some electric times for yours truly as a 10-year-old boy watching on the home television. Because the year before was exciting because I was rooting for the Dodgers. My mom grew up a Dodger fan when the Dodgers were in Brooklyn, and I just had no feel for being a Yankee fan growing up in Washington, D.C., without a team, by the way. The Senators had left in 72, I want to say, the last time. So I was four when they left. Never really remembered a baseball team. I didn't have a team, but I know I didn't like the Yankees. And I didn't like Reggie Jackson because, you know, he had become Mr. October the year prior by hitting three home runs in a single World Series game as the Yankees beat the Dodgers that year in six. So Reggie was as big as they come and cocky as the day is long. And so I was very much rooting for the Dodgers to stick it to Reggie and the Yankees. And I remember as a 10-year-old boy getting quite upset going, how are they allowing this? He's cheating, Mom. You can't, they can't let him do that. He's cheating. So in that series, when rookie Bob Welsh struck out Reggie to end the game in game two, oh, I was so excited for that. And this is what that sounded like. Electric atmosphere, final out of game two at Chavez Ravine.
So we're down to the last out for the Yankees. Dent, the tying run at second. Tiebreaker blares at first. Reggie Jackson is the batter.
You couldn't ask for a more dramatic moment for a young pitcher to walk into right here.
Strike one. Wow.
Reggie is literally falling out of the batter's box. He's swinging so hard.
Listen to him. There they go. Struck him out. Ball game is over. Bob Welsh, a tremendous pitching performance. Listen to the crowd.
Not only did he strike him out, but Reggie again swinging so hard that afterwards he sort of double clutched his bat in frustration. It was high theater, amazing stuff. A rookie and Bob Welsh bringing the best heat to take out Mr. October in the World Series. The other play, crazy play, one of these you've never seen this before play in baseball. 2004 ALCS, Yankees, Red Sox, and the A-Rod slap play. Here is what that sounded like. I'll give you the details for those youngins who don't remember it in person.
Off the end of the bat, Arroyo, the ball gets loose, it's down the right field line, Jeter coming all the way around, it's a one-run game, and now we're going to have an argument as Francona comes out of the dugout.
He swatted the ball out of Arroyo's hand.
If it's in the process of running to first base, that's one thing. If he intentionally swatted it with one hand or one arm or the other.
Saw A-Rod swipe it out of the glove of Arroyo.
That, I think he's out.
He should be out.
Yeah.
Yeah, they eventually ruled A-Rod out. But, of course, A-Rod being the cheater that he is and the narcissist that we know, of course, that's the kind of play that A-Rod would have done. Then there was, it wasn't so much a crazy play, but just kind of a crazy moment. 2000 World Series, Yankees-Mets, Clemens versus Piazza on the mound. Or Clemens on the mound, Piazza at the plate. Now, Piazza had hit Clemens well, but there was not widespread interleague play at that point. So he only had 12 at-bats, but he was still batting 543 against Clemens. Clemens, being the dick that he is and was, threw at Piazza's head earlier in the year and clipped him in the head, causing a concussion, so there's already bad blood. Then he comes up in the World Series. This would be, let me get this here for you. Hold on a second. Click my links here. All this elaborate prep to be smooth for you guys, and I'm blowing it. That also is not what I'm looking for. Where did it go? Anyway, oh yeah, there we go. Roger Clemens, bat Piazza. Game two of the 2000 World Series. And bad blood already. July 8th, Clemens beamed Piazza in the head with a fastball, causing a concussion and fueling animosity. Piazza had hit well against Clemens historically, 583, with two home runs and just 12 at-bats before the World Series. So here it was, first inning, foul ball by Piazza, saws his bat in half, and Clemens, the roid head, decides, oh, here, let me just take this chunk of baseball bat and throw it at the feet of Piazza, who had started down the first base line.
The barrel of the bat comes back at Roger Clemens, and he fires the bat back toward Piazza, who is going down the first baseline. That is all Roger Clemens there. A moment created by Clemens. And thankfully not much more on the field than these two benches emptying and the players now in a mode of standing around and trying to sort out what just happened. That was surprising.
Man, that is
I'll tell you, that is a blatant act right there. Piazza has every right to be upset.
The great Tim McCarver, rest in peace. We miss you. McCarver, who was so good at over-explaining things, at hammering a point redundantly into the ground, that my former colleague, Matt McLaughlin, who worked at One-on-One Sports with us, came up with this McCarver character. Not even an impression, but a character in which he would take the most mundane baseball things and bleed it into the dirt, McCarver style. You see, what he has there is he's got the bat in his hand, and he sees Piazza running and figures, why don't I throw this bat at his feet? I don't know, maybe to scare him. Maybe it could bounce up, and because it was broken, it would cut him on the leg. But that is a absolutely deliberate act right there by Roger Clemens. My bad, McCarver. Boy, the people who understand the McCarver character are few and far between at this point, so many years later, but still. I guess the whole point is, you watch baseball long enough, you're eventually going to see things, you go, holy shit, I've never seen that before. And that's what happened in the Dodgers and Brewers game one. We'll see what happens tonight. Could be a boring game, kind of like game two was between the Mariners and the Blue Jays, as the Mariners laid the wood to them and taking a 2-0 lead going back to Seattle with a chance to advance to the World Series. And yes, I am sorry, Blue Jays fans, all six of you listening, I am rooting for the Mariners because I have a couple friends who are Mariner friends. And I have one friend who is a Tiger friend. So because of that, I had to root for the Mariners. Three friends beats one friend when it comes to Mariners Tigers. I know no Blue Jay fans. None. Wait, hold on a second. Somebody I know said they're a Blue Jay fan. And they said they're a Blue Jay fan because they were a kid and they loved the hat. If you are listening right now, reach out to me. Who was that? No idea. Coming up, Paul Charchian will join me. He's got stuff to talk about, including some serious stuff, some lighthearted stuff, some football stuff, and a take on Monday Night Football that I am happy to say he agrees with me. You are listening to the Zabecast.
You know football and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over $500,000 to be won. Make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie, Zulu, Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season, exclusively at MyBookie.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I got very bad news for you, Charge. Very bad news. You and Roxy have been overruled by the listeners. They love this cheesy song.
Utah, people working together.
Utah,
what a great place to be. Blessed from heaven above. It's a land that we love.
Paul Charchian joins us from Utah as we speak. Sorry, buddy. You're still going to get Lou Cuckoo, Cuckoo Cuckoo on the way out.
I'll take that. That's a pretty good trade-off right there. I can't believe they wanted that over Donnie and Marie. What happened to Donnie? Good old Donnie and Marie.
It just didn't work. This thing is so cheesy and so sincere and just so one of a kind. They're like, you got to keep it as Charge's intro. They talk about Brigham Young and the Pioneers. Of course, you're not of you're not of the faith. You are non-Mormon. You're Armenian. Which makes
Armenians
you...
are, they were the very first Christian country ever, was Armenia.
Really?
Yeah, they did it 100 BC, AD. The first country to ever go fully Christian. They have their own Pope, a version of the Pope, Armenians do. And it is, they are very, very religious, very Christian people.
Wow. Okay. Well, very good. Well, Charge has brought topics to the table, which I love.
I have.
Because Charge really gets energized by our visits every week, and I appreciate that more than I can possibly express. And the listeners are like, I love it when you and Charge do a podcast together. You should do it more often. And the answer is, well, maybe we will, but we don't want you to get sick of us, so let's just keep us in rhythm here at once a week. But Charge has things. I have things. I want to start by asking you, Charge, how well do you know your memes?
Medium.
Okay.
I'd say I'm a medium memer.
Are you aware of what, and I don't know if this is the right name for the meme, but are you aware of the, what I call the unpopular opinion meme? It is a 1950s era looking, not photo, but oil painting.
Yes. Yeah, the guy standing up in the crowd.
A man, in a jacket with a rolled up piece of paper in his hand and an upward gaze as if he's addressing somebody at a town council where everyone else in the town is sitting behind him. And it's the photo that's used for people to express opinions in sports that may be unpopular but require courage and a steel jaw to stand up and speak into truth. Okay, so I'm going to have my moment for the uncomfortable truth, or what did I call this meme again? Unpopular. The unpopular truth.
Opinion.
Yeah. When you have two Monday night football games, you really have none. Neither game is special. And for those of us who have more than one TV, sure, we can glance at both and eeny, meeny, miny, moe it, but it's not the same. Mondays were meant to be a final gathering spot for all of us who love football and who know ball to gather and to scrutinize every play, every call, every dumbass coach's decision. And when you got two, you got none. I have spoken my piece. I shall sit down.
You are talking to somebody who watches eight games at one time.
I'm aware.
And as somebody that has taken, and I've been doing this for 30 years, where I try to track every game that's happening at one time. Two is comparatively easy for me.
Humble brag. Do you not hear my point, though, about...
I know. Well, hold on. Hold on. You are correct.
Oh.
As much as I want to say I can consume all of it, and at any given time, there's usually only one play going. The fact, you know, having the two plays at the same time is pretty rare, right? The plays last 5 seconds. There's 45 seconds between plays, roughly 30 to 45 between plays, plus all the commercials, plus everything else, right? So there's not even that many times that the games are happening. But all the points you made are right, especially this. It just isn't special. You know, there's something about everybody is focusing on one game. Even the Thursday nighter becomes more important to the sports viewing zeitgeist than two Monday nighters do. And the way they could have helped themselves is the way they did the one game earlier this year by having them at staggered starts, which I think helps a little, but it still doesn't solve all the key problems that you have identified. When there's one game, you own 24 hours of discussion on that game. Everything leading up to that one game, the immediate afterwards of that game, that's all that game. And so, yeah, I'm with you on this.
It okay. just
isn't.
I'm glad
the same
you're with me on this.
More than one.
Because, you know, it's more than just, well, I can watch two, or I'm used to watching two, or I've got two TVs. The point is, we need to coalesce as a community of sports fanatics to tweet about one game. And not only was there two games last night to deal with, there was baseball on top of that, and there was two compelling NFL games. I mean, they were both great games, and there was too much to take in between the two and to talk about communally amongst the two. You had Caleb Williams getting revenge on last year's throwaway game to the Commanders.
Yep.
It was the Commanders who returned the favor this year and threw it away themselves in the dumbest ways possible. It was Drake London and Bijan friggin' Robinson going nuclear in Atlanta, and a besieged Josh Allen throwing a pick that ended the game, essentially, late in that contest. Not a very good game for Josh Allen. There was too much going on, Charge.
Well, I think we can follow the two storylines. It's just more fun when there's one.
Well,
every fan is following at one game. You just sort of I don't know. I mean, I love being on Twitter for these games.
Yeah, I know.
I love social media for these games. I like sharing what's happening. And
that's why two is bad. It was already bad enough that I was fully locked in main screen, big jumbotron screen of the basement to the Brewers and the Dodgers.
Brewers.
And I just talked. I talked about before you came on here on the pod. I talked about the crazy double play and some of the craziest postseason plays that I recall in baseball history. But so you had a lot going on last night. We're going to have a lot going on for the next 2 weeks, pretty much every night. And that's the way we like it in sports, but I would rather just have one Monday night football game. The great Ricky Cobb from Super 70 Sports tweeted, if you're under 40, tweeted a picture, a crude graphic of the Dallas Cowboys and the Washington Redskins, ABC's Monday night football from RFK Memorial Stadium in Washington, D.C., and it says, if you're under 40, you cannot possibly begin to understand how fucking important Monday Night Football used to be. You and I are over 40. We know. Care to tell people why it was so titanic back when we were kids?
There was, at least for me, every Monday night during football season was a special night. I would get out all my homework. I'd spread it out in the living room, and during the game, I'm watching the game and I'm doing my homework, and it made homework to me, you know,
bearable, right?
And I could do my homework because I had football on.
Right.
Howard Cosell was an institution.
Howard Cosell. We have a matchup tonight that is sure to entertain the masses. Two spectacular throwers of the football, Roger Staubach against Joe Theismann. Theismann in college, but he changed his name to win the Heisman Trophy Award. Did not work. Two bitter rivals tonight on Monday Night Football.
And the other part of Monday Night Football that I loved, I mean, in addition to the fact that it was a big deal, it was, you know, you couldn't see all the games. You know, back then, the only games you could see were the games that were broadcast in your area. So you would get your local game. For me, that would be the Vikings at noon. For you, that would be the Redskins at 1 o'clock. You'd get the an opposing game on another channel. You'd get an afternoon game. That was it. And then you got Monday Night Football. This was the one game the whole country was watching at the same time. And it was almost always a great game. The Monday nights have been replaced by Sunday nights in terms of quality. Sunday night gets all the great games now. Monday night gets an inconsistent roster of games. But the other thing I loved about Monday Night Football was the halftime, when you got to see the highlights of all the other games.
Okay.
Because you couldn't see what else was going on in the league.
I'm giving you, I'm going to play for you right now. First of all, what is a good meaty highlight package in today's television terms? How long is a good meaty highlight package? Minutes and seconds.
20 seconds.
20 seconds.
You get like three plays from a game. I mean, you get three or four plays from a game. That's it. Then the talking heads break it down for another 30 seconds. That's all you get, Zabe.
Okay.
That's all you get is three or four plays in a highlight package.
Okay. What have I told you? First of all, then, okay, second question. How long is an official NFL halftime?
20?
No, it's 12. It's very short.
Thank you.
Okay. What have I told you that in 1973, 74, 75, 76, Howard Cosell at halftime was given 8 or 9 minutes of uninterrupted highlights?
Oh, jeez.
I mean, are you kidding me? Take a listen to Howard Cosell back in the day.
He goes down the left sideline, a 29-yard gain. Now we're just 6 plays later, and it's Landry again, the great running back, moving in for the touchdown himself. Not just a fine quarterback, but a great running quarterback, and the Lions lead it 13-10. But just 2 plays later, the young man from Columbia, Marty Domras, throwing downfield, Glenn Doughty, and he's all alone. He got past the Detroit secondary, and this is a 66-yard touchdown play of the Colts.
I mean, it just went on and on.
And so the Pack tightens the game at 10-7. But on the fifth play of the fourth quarter, with the Rams now leading 13-7, let's have a look at Mr. Hadle.
John Hadle.
Wow.
So that is part of what made Monday night great. Now I know the youngins are going to scream at us right now saying, okay, boomers, enough pining for the good old days. They're never coming back. I know they're not, but we got to hold the line. Hold the line. We got to say Monday night belongs to one game and one game only. And with that, we move on. Charge.
Can I give you one more thing on Howard Cosell?
Yes.
I didn't know he did so many games drunk.
Are you sure it was him and not Summerall and not Brookshire who was drunk?
Summerall also, but apparently, and this is according to Grok, I just Googled this. In 1970, he was so drunk during a game in Philadelphia that he threw up on Don Meredith.
Hey, Dandy Don, that'll make you look better. I mean, Cosell hated athletes. And so even though he worked with Don Meredith, deep down he resented them because he considered it part of the jockocracy and that they didn't have the requisite broadcasting skills that he had. Did you ever hear Mike Cosell jockocracy rant?
No.
Oh, okay. Let me see. Oh, here we go. Okay. You're going to like this one. Ready? Here we go.
Yeah.
Oh, hold on a second. Hold on a second. Just gotta close this out here. Okay. That's not done. This segment brought to you by Barbasol. Barbasol for the best shave ever. Get to serve Barbasol today. Okay. Here we go.
As one of TV's most renowned broadcasters, Howard Cosell was a man of many opinions. One of his biggest pet peeves was what he termed jockocracy.
They don't ask a lot of me, do they? Tell the public about this. It's the jocks who played the game, right? They should be on the air, right? Gee, that's a disgraceful thing.
What a nice fella good old Howard Cosell was. Okay,
yes.
Moving on.
One last thing on his boozing, if you don't mind.
Yeah, please.
1984 American League Championship Series. Cosell drinking during the broadcast, play-by-play announcer Al Michaels confronts him saying, "You're drunk, you're ruining the telecast," and Michaels threatened to quit if Cosell ever appeared drunk on air.
Wow, that's some good stuff right there. Okay, before we get to your items, and they're good items.
Yes.
It is now being reported that apparently your boy Jay McCarthy may not start this coming week against the Eagles, and it is being termed as perhaps a soft benching of sorts. I tried to tell you this 6 weeks ago. Your sweet purple heart did not want to believe it.
We don't know where the fine line is between him with this high ankle sprain, an offensive line that's missing a bunch of people, and they may not want to put him behind that.
Right.
And he's just not good enough, right? Or he's deemed to be not good enough, and they feel like Carson Wentz gives them the right the best chance to win. I don't know where that line is either, and none of us do. I think if he doesn't start here, it raises an eyebrow about J.J. McCarthy and what the level of trust is. And there'll be a lot of damage control later in the week as they're talking about the ankle's not ready yet. We want to put him in the best spot to win, blah, 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 blah. But I've not seen the report you're referring to. I'm not saying it's wrong. I haven't seen that yet, but I want to wait a few days. It's only Tuesday as we're recording this.
All right.
Let's see what the story is later in the week here. There's still a lot of people whose jobs rely on J.J. McCarthy turning into a good quarterback.
Right. Then there's this. I asked during the game on Sunday between the Packers and the Bengals, I said, just how ass was Jake Browning that the whole organization thought, let's trade for 41-year-old Joe Flacco and then read him the playbook while he's in the Lincoln Town Car driving across the state of Ohio from Cleveland to Cincinnati. Like, Jake Browning must have been such unstomachable ass that they were like, this is a better solution. Now, I will say Flacco threw some seeds, did a little bit of damage against the Packers defense, but they were never really a threat to win the game. And I'm not the only one who's befuddled by this. So is Mike Tomlin. Tomlin was asked about this and had one of the all-time epic answers about what the Bengals and the Browns more particularly are doing.
You know, to be honest, it was shocking to me. Andrew Berry must be a lot smarter than me or us, because it doesn't make sense to me to trade a quarterback that you think enough of to make your opening day starter to a division opponent that's hurting in that area. But that's just my personal feelings.
That is a sick burn. As somebody put it, the Browns are so incompetent, it's starting to piss off the rest of their division rivals.
Anytime somebody says, so-and-so must be a lot smarter than me, we always know that it's that really insult. Means the opposite, right?
It means I think you're dumb as a bag of rocks. So
yes.
Okay. Yep. All right.
That is, there's something to that, man. If you're the Browns, why would you bail in a season in which at that point you still had clinging to like some little small ray of hope of your season? I do not understand why they tried to help a division rival that way.
Not only that, but they only moved up one round. They traded a seventh to get a sixth, or I think a sixth to get a fifth. It was a scooch up, basically. The most non-impactful move ever. And he was their starting quarterback to start the year. And only the Browns can do that kind of a thing. Okay, let's get to Charge's topics. They include the curse of the 1-1 quarterback, you never stop appreciating the approval of your parents, bathroom fans, noisy or silent, and family arriving at 5:15, which will activate the dog's barking. Oh, wait, that's not a topic. That's not a topic. That was just a warning. From you to me.
That was just a warning for between the two of us. But I've got one more that I just saw, but right before we came on the air.
Hit me with it.
Do you still have DirecTV, correct?
I do, only because the missus said, oh, I don't understand streaming. Oh, ick. How do I get there? Where do I YouTube TV? What? Can I just get DirecTV? And I go, fine. So I called DirecTV and I said, look, you need to strip me down to the most basic shit you got. It has to have the Hallmark channel because that's the only thing the missus watches. So I'm on a very limited DirecTV plan. It's under 100
I think Hallmark costs you extra, but yes.
Whatever. It's under $100 a month and it's there as just a backup. So, okay. Yes. I still have it. I rarely watch it though.
Yes. Here's what they're doing now. If you have the current generation of DirecTV streaming device called a Gemini,
I do.
They are going to start creating on the fly AI ads specific to you that include you in the ads and everything that they have gleaned about you. So in this case, they know, they can figure out, they know who you are because you're attached to the account. You're Steve Zabin. They can look through the internet and find Steve Zabin photos. Oh, they know what Steve Zabin watches, apparently the Hallmark channel, and they will start creating on the fly unique ads, AI created ads that only you will ever see because it is specific to you.
Holy shit.
Holy shit.
I need to alert my family of this, lest they run into one of these ads without knowledge. There will be a heart attack. There will be a what the fuck is going on? Wow.
I want to see it first.
Can I sue them for using my likeness and image without my express written consent from Major League Baseball?
I'm guessing, you know, it's probably buried in their terms of service. And by using your Gemini device, you are allowing them to use this AI-driven service to collect your data and send you personalized ad marketing messages just curated just for you.
Well, I hope
will also be starring you.
I hope the AI version of me in the commercial is really skinny, muscled, and has six-pack abs and hair. That'd be pretty sweet.
Well, then it's not you, is it? Then
well, it's the version of me I dream of. Maybe if they do that, then I'll sit and I'll watch a whole bunch of ads. Sell me some shit. I don't give a crap. DirecTV, bring it on. Okay.
Do you want to be? I always opt out of all of the personalized marketing things that I ever have the chance to opt out of because I don't want to be better sold anything. I spend enough money.
Okay.
I don't need to opt out.
I try to opt out. Do you also opt out of cookies? Reject optional cookies? Reject all cookies?
I always reject all optional cookies.
Do you allow your device to find other devices on your local network? Yes or no?
That I feel like I have to do, but probably shouldn't be.
Do you upsize your meal at McDonald's or Burger King?
No.
Okay. Not. All right. Do you get free shipping from Amazon?
Yes.
Thank God.
Speaking of which, I ran into some people talking about this. Here's the scam they're running on Amazon. They buy a mattress from Amazon and then
they
say that it, you know, oh, makes my back hurt. I need to return it. And Amazon does not want to pay the return shipping on a mattress.
So they say keep it.
Yes. Now you can't do it indefinitely because they are always monitoring you for what kind of a return risk you are.
Oh,
but
they know me.
Telling their friends.
They know I am a high risk entity.
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
And one other thing on ads that I wanted to mention to you, because I think you'll appreciate this. My brother who lives nearby brought over a device that I hook into my, home network system.
Yep.
That blocks most every internet delivered ad. This device sits in a layer between the internet and your devices. Oh, and if it sees any of the common ad sending platforms, it will block all those ads.
Oh God. VPNs, pop-up blockers, ad blockers, Bitcoin paid for free streaming services that get you. I ain't got time for all that, Church. I ain't got time for all that. Send me the ads. You know, there's some products and services that I might want to avail myself of. How do I know I want to block all ads? I'm a consumer.
Well, that's true.
I want things. All right. Curse of the 1-1 quarterback. I assume you're talking about Cam Ward, who is right now struggling mightily because the Titans are terrible and they just fired their coach.
Yes, that is exactly what I'm talking about. The curse of the 1-1 quarterback, the last four teams that have drafted 1-1, they've taken a quarterback in the first round, and the head coach has not survived the season. If your team is so bad that you're picking near the top of the draft, then, you know, your coach is already on a hot seat spot. You draft the new solution, Cam Ward.
All right, so
before that,
the Flus got it last year with Caleb. Who else?
You got it. Bryce Young was the year before that, and that would have been, I'm trying to remember who Carolina's coach that year was. That was Frank Reich.
Yeah.
He got nuked the year before that, and the year before that, I don't know if there was there one the year before that. I'm trying to think. Trayvon Walker might have been the first pick that year. First quarterback.
I'll look it up right now. Drafthistory.com by position. Let's see. QB.
Trevor Lawrence that year.
That would have been Urban Meyer.
Yep. That was the previous one. Urban Meyer, fired, halfway through his season that year. The 1-1 is if you're the head coach and the team is motoring to the first overall pick in the draft and you take that quarterback who's supposed to be the immediate solution and is supposed to help right away. Now you don't have that. You can't, the head coach can't hide behind bad quarterbacking play because the head coach was part of the process of picking that kid, and presumably. And so then when it doesn't work out, nuked.
How about this? You got to go back to since 2017, only 1 year was a quarterback not taken 1-1.
Mm.
That was the Kenny Pickett year when he went 20th, 2022. Oh. But walking backwards through the years, Cam Ward this year 1-1, Caleb Williams 1-1 last year, Bryce Young 1-1 before that. Don't forget Carolina pulled a trade to get him 1-1.
Right.
Or they traded right with the Bears to get that 1-1. They still aren't doing much right now. 2022 was Kenny Pickett 20th overall. Desmond Ridder and Malik Willis were the second and third quarterbacks taken. Suffice to say, that was a dry spot in the pipeline of quarterback talent. Trevor Lawrence 1-1 in 2021. Joe Burrow in 2020. Kyler Murray in 2019. Baker Mayfield in 2018. And Mitchell Trubisky in 2017.
Sad Trombonski.
Sad Trombonski, as you called him, was 1-2. 1-2 in 2017. Jared Goff resumed the trend, 1-1 in 2016. Jameis Winston, 1-1 2015. Blake Bortles was the third overall pick in 14, first quarterback taken, 1.3. Then E.J. Manuel in 2013 was 16th as the first quarterback taken. Andrew Luck was 1-1 in 12. Cam Newton was 1-1 in 11. Sam Bradford was 1-1 in 10. Stafford was 1-1 in 09. Matt Ryan was 1.3 in 08. Tell me your league is too dependent on great quarterbacks without telling me your league is too dependent on great quarterbacks.
Really, it's so critical, right? And look at how many, what is the success rate out of all those guys that you mentioned? 4, 5 turned out to be truly franchise quarterbacks, performed at a high level, got to Super Bowls. There is no guarantee that first pick gets you
agreed
where you think it's going to get you. And it's, you know, and maybe that's part of why the NFL teams don't suck for luck, that they don't intentionally lose games to try to get to the top of the draft, because it's not the same as basketball where you know, that first overall player is almost certainly going to be a star.
Yeah. All right. You never stop appreciating the approval of your parents. Talk to me.
My parents are here now in Southern Utah. Nice. They've come in for the first time, and they're in their mid 80s. They are, they're doing great, great people. And you know, I have found that with all the change, they're having them come and tell me they love my house, my geography.
They approve of your bold life decision. Do they still live in Minnesota?
They do. And they're very sad. Both myself and my brother,
of course,
they're only
sad.
Two kids, both moved.
Yeah, because they're old and they still live where it's freezing. Maybe they should figure out. Tell them to get a nice plot of rocks somewhere down the street. Live next to you in Utah.
Yeah, my mom would do it tomorrow. My dad won't. And you know what? What I've been surprised by is how much their approval still means.
Aww.
And I think that's just baked into all of us, right? That
we
always want, from the moment we were born, we've wanted parental approval. And we've wanted the pat on the back, and we've wanted the kind words. And it still means a lot as a mid-50s person, you know, that doesn't need it. It means a lot still to have my parents' approval for these kinds of things. And boy, my dad, my Tesla, my dad is just blown away. he's heaping praise. Wow. He's just, his mind is blown by this thing. And it's been really fun hearing them talk about all these changes and things that I've done, and to know that they understand why, and that they like the life that I've built here.
Charge, that is a beautiful thing. I love hearing that. And you're so right. And I would say that those of us, not that I did, but I'd say anyone that grew up with perhaps a little bit of parental distance or a little bit of subtle feeling of parental disapproval, many people carry that like a wound for the rest of their life, that it hurts. It's a burden because that is so baked in to the DNA of just how we are as humans. And so I feel for those people that have a hard time because they feel like my mom never loved me. My dad never thought I was going to be anything. And think of all the movies that have that storyline to it, where the father of the sports figure finally comes around and either goes to a game with his kid or hugs him after a big win or said you did okay. I'm trying to think examples. I know it was a comedy, but Ricky Bobby, his dad, you know, he finally Ricky Bobby's dad finally came around. But he was an asshole all the way up until the very end, getting his comp tickets and then selling them, turning right around. Who needs two?
Friday Night Lights had that as a recurring theme in it. It's I just think it's universal in most of us. And I was thinking about your dad that I was sorry. I was sorry that you are not in a position to be able to hear from your dad and get the approval from your dad anymore. And so I was thinking about you as well. And just wanted to share that.
Well, I appreciate that. You're very blessed that they're there. And I'm so happy that they approve of what is a bold and rather unconventional move by you. It takes balls the size of church bells, Charge, to do what you did. And I think it's a beautiful thing. Also, in the documentary called The Back Nine at Cherry Hills, great golf documentary, only an hour long, directed by Ross Greenberg, HBO, and he basically chronicles how Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, and Ben Hogan, three titans of the game, intersected basically once at the 1960 U.S. Open at Cherry Hills. Hogan's career was coming to an end. Nicklaus was just a young buck in his ascendancy, and Palmer was in the prime of his career, right? And so Palmer, they interviewed everybody but Hogan, or they interviewed family members around him, but Palmer talked about how his father, who was a greenskeeper at this country club in Pennsylvania, at Latrobe Country Club, and that didn't give Arnie the country club life because his dad was working class, even though he was the head greenskeeper, you know. So he didn't get to swim at the pool. He and his sisters swam in the creek, they said, in Latrobe. But his dad, Deacon, was a hard drinker, abusive at times to his mom. Arnie recounted how once he intervened when his dad came home from a card game too drunk and started giving it to his mom, that he stood between them and that his dad picked him up and basically shoved him against a stovepipe in their house, denting the stovepipe, and pretty much said, you know, you want a piece of me, kid? But, you know, Arnie's dad finally came around after he won the Masters for the first time, said, you done good, kid. And Arnie says it choking up. It was incredibly powerful. So that's a big thing.
That's a great story. Arnie Palmer is obviously, you know, needless to say, a legend. Do you think he is appreciated enough today for how good and for how long he was great?
Not appreciated, because today's youngins, they don't appreciate shit. They don't know anything. They don't care about anything. There's a few exceptions that are historical and historically oriented, but no, they don't. They don't know. They don't give a shit. But that's fine. Those of us who are old enough do. You know, if I come out there, Charge, to visit, which you have teased me with, you've sent a hypothetical itinerary of me flying to Vegas, you and I hanging out for a Sunday at Circa, and then heading back up to your place. If we actually do that, I'll bring on a thumb drive, the documentary, and you could watch it with me, and I think you'd really appreciate it.
I would love that. I would love that. It sounds fantastic.
All right. Well, we're hung up on the war committee. You've got to pass it through through Congress at your house. So get to drafting that legislation, and let's figure out some dates, because, you know, you and I are, well, yeah, you and I are about to have some time on our hands. Let's just put it that way. I don't want to break any news here. Okay. Bathroom fans, noisy versus silent. Talk to me.
This is a tough decision, Zabe. So right behind, okay, do you see behind me is a closet?
Yes.
Behind that is a bathroom. Now, of course, bathroom fans, many times you want them to be noisy, right? They have a specific purpose that is not just to suck up air, but also to warn noise.
To warn, well, yeah, to cover the tinkling and the grunting and the plopping of doing your business. But also, when the fan is going, it's a warning. Careful.
Yeah,
no fly zone.
You should proceed with caution.
You might want to take a little and then back away if it's not ready to land. If it's a hot LZ, a hot landing zone, don't go in there. Also, I don't know if there's any proof that louder bathroom fans are stronger.
Work any better, right?
But I would be willing to bet they probably are. And if that's the case, I want my bathroom fans to be powerful enough to take the hat off your head.
Your hair stands straight up.
Yes. If they could spec me one of those, I'd be all about it. What are you leaning towards?
I'm debating if I have this fan on, my mic picks it up. And so there's a background whirr sound, right? And this
that's unacceptable. Yeah, you can't have
that's that. That's not acceptable. No. So then I have to think, okay, am I really going to put a silent fan in because of all the reasons you just mentioned? You don't want a silent fan. But there is the utility of the silent fan, and it doesn't necessarily send a signal to the rest of the house that this has been a recently used bathroom, which is something that I think is important. And the other thing on the bathroom fans, Abe, who decided in the last like 15 years that hotel rooms don't need bathroom fans anymore?
Hotel rooms need them more than anybody. Yes, exactly. Yes.
It's a tiny space. You need all the coverage that the noisy bathroom fan gives you when you're in the hotel room with a loved one. You need that coverage.
And absolutely.
No hotels have them anymore. All the new hotels don't have fans. I don't understand why they took that out.
Interesting. Well, you know, it depends on the caliber of the hotel. I told a story here on the Zabecast of the Comfort Inn I stayed in on the way back from Milwaukee with my U-Haul full of shit. And the nice gentleman at the front desk, probably Pakistani, just trying to make his way in America, said, "It's a perfectly fine room, sir, but I must open it for you. The lock does not work." And I go, "What does that mean?" He goes, "I just need to open it for you. But otherwise, once you're in, you can lock it and you'll be safe and fine. The room is fine otherwise." Of course, sink didn't drain properly. So when I shaved, I'm like, "Well, someone's going to have to clean up all my whiskers on the side of the bowl. I'm sorry, but it's not my fault. Your sink." Oh, by the way, I firmly believe you want to end full circle here on a,
yes,
at a statement that I will die on. Okay. The contraption to clog and unclog a sink drain is way too complicated and breaks way too often. Surely charge somebody can invent a better mousetrap when it comes to sink drains. I'm not kidding. It's unbelievable how finicky and how often they fuck up. And that I will stand on. Any thoughts?
You would think by now we've had indoor plumbing for 100 plus years. You would think the drain would be pretty basic and foolproof at this point, but doesn't always work that way, my man. And you know it. It's, you know, some drains don't set right. There are some that you can't get into. Like if you've got a hairball in there and you need to get some out, good luck getting that drain up and out and then back in. Yeah, it's, you'd think by now, you'd think it'd be easier.
Charge still hosts Fantasy Football Weekly, the best damn and one of the OG fantasy football shows out there. Make sure to download it wherever you get your podcast. That is Fantasy Football Weekly. Anyone can draft Bijan Robinson in the first round. In fact, he probably went 1-1 in a lot of leagues this year, I'm guessing. But who had the brains to take Rico Dowdle as a third or fourth round flyer? Probably nobody.
That would have been the 18th round flyer right there. Yes.
He like not even draftable, basically?
He was undrafted in most leagues because Chuba Hubbard was supposed to be the workhorse. Hubbard gets hurt. Rico Dowdle steps in and makes Hubbard look like a fool. And he has more yards in two games than Saquon Barkley has all year. Rico Dowdler. The Dowdler.
The Dowdler. All right, Church, is always a pleasure. Say hi to your mom and dad for me, and we'll try to work on that visit this fall.
You got it.
All right, buddy. See you.
Okay, everyone, like, this is me on the drums,
Oh, get out. It is not.
It is so.
Stop
I
lying,
learned.
Will you?
Take off, eh? Oh,
take off!
You know football and you pick winners all the time, so why not get paid for them at MyBookie? Bet single game spreads, money lines, or parlays to increase your payouts. Low contest entry fees and over a half a million dollars to be won make it so you don't have to be a pro gambler to have fun. Getting started is easy. Just visit MyBookie.ag and use promo code ZABE on your first deposit to secure a double deposit bonus. That's promo code Charlie Zulu. Alpha, Bravo, Echo to get your first deposit matched dollar for dollar, all the way up to $1,000. MyBookie is a proven sports book that makes it simple to bet and to win. So make this your winning season exclusively at MyBookie.